Genetech's been talking about it because they're talking about the Ready, Set, Go Giver program now. And I, as I was talking to some people this week, I thought, you know, we never did review the Go Giver book on my Monday call, and I think it's a great book. I think it's got some great stuff in it, and I thought, what appropriate time to do that as everybody's getting close to either attending Manifest. A lot of you are going to be there, but there are a lot of you who may not be attending Manifest, but you're going to get a hold of the new system, the Ready, Set, Go Giver. And it might be a great idea to understand what this Go Giver book's about. I believe you can still buy these books from the Manitech website. Manitech is selling them, but not that you have to get them. I'll tell you one thing about the book. If you sit down to read it, if you're a relatively, you know, I guess I don't think I'm a speed reader by any means, but a stretch of the imagination. But this is a type of book you can read from front to back in probably an hour or less, or maybe, you know, for some of you, maybe take a couple 2 hours. But it's a very quick read, very, very quick. It's a very tiny book, and it's easy reading. It's not something you have to spend a lot of time digging in. But it's got some great concepts, and that's what I want to do today, is spend some time on the call just reviewing concepts. And for those of you who've read the book, if you want to add to it, you're more than welcome to, you know, contribute as we go through the concepts in the book and talk about what the substance of this book is, and then look at, you know, what does it have to do with Manitech? I mean, and you're going to see through each and every step of the way that a lot of these concepts really represent or reflect the heart of who we are. I mean, I think it's kind of our cultural instinct for so many of us in Manitech that this is just the way we live our lives and how that makes a difference for us in our lives. So, Go Giver by Bob Berg, and the way this book is written, it's very cute because I think I reviewed with you guys Referral of a Lifetime, which is a book written by Timothy Templeton. I think I've reviewed that book and did a book review on that one a few months back, and he wrote the same kind of concept in his book. He took after the same thing about visiting different mentors and learning different lessons. And so I thought that was kind of intriguing that Bob kind of took after that style of writing. And that's what Bob's done in his, is the same kind of thing. It's about visiting different mentors and learning each step of the way as he went through it. The book is basically a story about a really young, ambitious guy, Joe, who desires success and, you know, really committed to success. He's in the advertising industry, and he's real desperate to meet his quota. He has quotas each quarter, and he's missed his first quarter and missed his second quarter, and now he's like in total anxiety over making sure he hits his third quarter numbers, and he's a week away from the end of that quarter and under a lot of stress. And he just feels lost. He feels like, you know, things just aren't going right, and he's starting to seek some advice because he's finding out that things just aren't happening for him the way he wants them to happen. So he goes and he seeks some advice from the chairman, and over the next week, he's introduced to 5 go-givers and learned the 5 laws of stratospheric success through his visits with these people. And the visits, of course, change his focus, and so many of our focus is on just what do we get from something, from getting. He always was focused on getting instead of focusing on giving. And just that shift in his heart and in his philosophy totally changed his life. And a year later, the last part of the book is about where he was a year later, which is exciting, and I won't give you that part until we get there. So we'll just kick off and talk about Joe's step-by-step process of understanding the 5, as they call them, the 5 laws of stratospheric success. The first meeting that he had with the chairman was just about trying to secure this guy's advice. He heard the guy had some trade secrets, so he wanted to go and learn his trade secrets. And he walked in the room, and Rachel was a woman that was working for him at his house at the time, and at the chairman's house. She made great coffee. One of the comments in the early part of the book, which I thought was intriguing, was he came in and he was talking about her coffee, and the chairman said, yeah, she's really, you know, she has excellent coffee. She was from Colombia or something, and she has contacts everywhere on where to get the most supreme coffees around the world. And he talked about her background, and so she has made this incredible networking of people, coffee growers, not the brokers, but the growers. So she had an ability to, you know, bypass some of the overcharges and just, you know, she could make a great business someday with all of her networking she's done with great coffee producers. And Joe's comment was, oh, my gosh, she could really go out there and make a killing. And right off the bat, the chairman made the first comment about languaging. And languaging is so powerful. I tell people this all the time. So here's a concept that Joe talked about, Rachel making a killing. And the chairman said, no, that's why don't we talk about sharing her coffee? See the language differencing. And that was the, kind of the big giving was the basic core trade principle that the chairman had to offer. We talk about giving. We don't talk about making a killing. It's a shift in our languaging. And the quote out of the book that I thought was so cool in that first introductory part was, he said, trying to be successful by making money as your goal is like trying to travel a superhighway at 70 miles per hour with your eyes glued to the rearview mirror. And I think that's a great one. If you use that quote and put that out there, all of a sudden you'll get kind of the idea of why am I focusing on dollars? Why do I focus? And I think one of the things we've done in Manitech over the years is when we talk about people setting goals, it's not just financial goals, you know, that we have, but we set we look at the how many people we want to touch. You know, even when I talk about the ICANN program with people, and as I shared with it over the weekend, I'm sitting in an op meeting on Friday night, and I said, you know, one of the beautiful things, Mary, is not only are you going to have 2,000 to 6,000 of residual income coming in every single month, so thus supporting your financial security for yourself, but more importantly, this program called ICANN is about the 4,000 people that you will have touched. Just because today you said, I can do this. Because 12 months from now, there'll be 4,000 people that were touched just because you said, I can. And, so it's about what we're sharing and what we're giving to others and the opening up to other people. And that's the focus that we need to have. So don't make making money as your goal. Make it on the focus on how many people you're going to touch and the sharing that goes on here and the giving that we have. Successful people focus on what they are giving, sharing, and through that, they become successful. So it's not a focus on them. It's kind of like going back to, you know, Warren's book, you know, Purpose Driven Life, and it's not about me. It's about taking the focus off of you and focusing on other people. So, and another comment he made in the foreword of the book was, too, that you don't get what you want. Rather, you get what you expect. So we can't sit there and say, these are the things I want, and I'm going to get what I want. It's more building expectations in our head. If we expect failure, we'll get failure. That's why we try to keep people working on the thought processes, that little voice in their head, and all the things that we say to ourselves. You know, what if it doesn't work out? That comment drives me crazy. And one of the first times I heard it from somebody was when Lydia was driving from the East Coast to come work for me, and she said in the car, we were having a conversation in the car as she was driving here, she said, and this is over 4 years ago, as many of you know, Lydia's been working for me for over 4 years now. So one of the comments she said in the car, she said, well, Mary Jo, what if it doesn't work out? And I just almost flipped out. I almost totally flipped out. It was like... You know, that kind of languaging never enters my brain. I don't understand it. I don't get why people think that way. There's no place for it on the face of the earth. What if it doesn't work out? When you're thinking, and some people go, well, Mary Jo, I'm just planning for the worst of all scenario. I said, great, then you'll create it. I said, you know, when you start doubting yourself and doubting everything, you create what you think. You get what you expect. So if you expect it not to work out, you're going to create that. If you expect it to fail, if you expect it not to work, some people get involved in network marketing and they go, well, it's never worked for me before, so why should it work now? Well, you know what? You're right. It's not going to because you've built the expectation. So, and he talked about that, and it's great that we really need to clear up our expectations. We need to expect greatness in our life and expect greater things and then watch what happens because you get what you expect. So then we jump into the first law. So the first day the chairman puts him out, and he says, you're going to meet with this guy. So he takes him to a restaurant, and he meets Ernesto. And Ernesto used to have a hot dog stand. Imagine being on a street corner selling hot dogs. That's what this guy was, on a street corner selling hot dogs. Now he's a multi-millionaire with a string of restaurants and real estate holdings galore. How? And what happened with Ernesto, he learned that incredible law, the law of value. When he sold his hot dogs, he he made that hot dog sale a dining experience, an unforgettable event. So what happened is people would stop by his hot dog stand, and he would interchange with them. He would pour into them, "How are you doing, Sam? How's your daughter? How's your wife, Sarah?" He would remember people's names. He'd remember their children's names. He would remember birth dates. He'd remember events. He collected data on people, and he made the experience of buying a hot dog at his stand an unforgettable event. And the concept here is that you provide a higher quality here. He said, made this comment, "A great restaurant provides a higher quality of food and service than any amount of money could possibly buy." So his hot dog experience around his little corner, you know, of a street corner hot dog experience was selling hot dogs, but making it an unforgettable experience by each and every person that came by. And soon he was having businessmen have meetings at his hot dog stand. They would all go, "Hey, let's go to Ernesto's hot dog. Let's all go get a hot dog from Ernesto," because they all learned about this guy through, you know, talking about this incredible character who had this, you know, just was, you know, great personality and loved to just really make people feel great. So he, you know, he just kept doing it and doing it, and finally through, you know, all the networking that takes place when you make people feel great, and the networking that took place, of course, Ernesto ended up being sponsored into a restaurant. He ended up buying out his partners and putting a chain of restaurants together and buying more real estate and networking through that, and all of a sudden the guy became a multimillionaire. But it was the basic law of what? That our true worth is determined by how much more we give in value than we take in payment. He never had to memorize people's names or get to know their daughters or their wives or the event dogs on the corner of a street and never know any of the patrons that come and buy them from you. And that's how most people sell their hot dogs. But that wasn't Ernesto's concept. He chose to make it an unforgettable experience for each and every individual. And he didn't do it with the purpose of what he was going to get out of it. He did it with what purpose? Because that's what made the business enjoyable and worthwhile to him. He found it much more exhilarating to pour into people, and that's what he did. So anyway, so he made that. That's the law. Your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. How does this kind of law apply with Manitech? Well, look at how much we pour into people. Each and every person I work with, you know, when I start working with somebody on the products, I don't look at them and say, "Hey, get them started, slap them into automatic order and move on." You know, it's like I make the commitment up front. I tell them, "You know what, I'm in this for whatever length of time you want to play ball, because my goal is your goal, which is to achieve the best possible health. So let's email each other. Let's make sure you're seeing the results. Let's make sure we get in contact. If we need to add more products, maybe we need to add other products." So I work with other products, omega-3s. I work with acupuncturists, NAIT treatments. I just work with all sorts of alternative health approaches. And we make sure they get proper water. We make sure they're getting exercise. I have exercise programs I recommend to people. I mean, the whole kit and how to eat, even eating behaviors. We have different, you know, somebody with cholesterol, I give them a low cholesterol diet plan. This is what you want to stay away from in your diet to make sure. It's not just about taking Ambritosin Plus and Immunostart. It's about what are you feeding in between those lips every day? How are you feeding that body? So it becomes a bigger picture, and that's far greater. The value you're giving people is far greater than what you take in payment. Health seminars at my church. I do health seminars every month now at my church. They love the other one I did so much. They said that we can't do these just quarterly, Mary Jo. We need a monthly. So I go, "Oh, great. Find a Saturday open in my month." So Lydia's doing that with the pastor's wife, and we're now doing monthly health seminars. In fact, last month I did it on the weight loss, permanent weight loss, so you never have to worry about it again. And then this month we're doing it on cardiovascular health because, of course, heart disease is still the number one killer in the United States. So I do these health seminars. This month we'll probably have 50 or more because everybody went so crazy. They loved it so much. So we're having – but the idea is I don't charge a dime. It's about what? It's true. Well, your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. So it's about stepping up and just giving people more and more and more and just giving to people and watch what happens. As you sow, so shall you reap. That's the law. That's a biblical principle for those of you who understand Scripture. It's, you know, we sow into people. It's not about, you know, what they pay you for it. It's about just giving and keep giving and watch what happens, how it comes back around. So one of the rules of Joe working with the chairman throughout this whole book was that not only did he have to learn the principle or the law each one of these days, but he had to apply it in his own life. So the condition under each one of my, in the outline, when I say the word condition, that means that's the condition. The condition, the chairman would only work with Joe if under the condition that he applied the law before the next day. So here he learned this law about, you know, your true worth is how much more you give in value than you take in payment. And so he had to think about, well, how was I going to do this? So he goes back to his job, and he, after his lunch with Ernesto, goes back to his job, and he's at his desk, and one of his clients calls up and says, you know, Joe, we just couldn't go with your company because you didn't have the right services we needed for our international business and this kind of this and this and this. And it devastated Joe. Not only wasn't he growing his business in the third quarter, he now is losing a client. But in the realm of listening to his client, he started thinking about your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Well, he was going to get no payment from this customer, this client that was now discontinuing their relationship with him. But he said, wait a minute, let me give you a referral. So he dug into his little drawer, and he found a card of a competitor. But he knew this guy had more international experience. So he gave an ex-client a competitor's name to help support the ex-client. And he got off the phone with this client, and he like kind of looked in the mirror and said, what just happened? He could hardly believe it himself that not only did he take the bad news that he lost one of his clients, but he gave one of his competitors a referral of that client to support the client's needs. He was going to get nothing in payment, and yet he still stepped up to the plate and did what was best as a winning proposition. And that was gigantic. It was huge. So it may not have helped him in his third quarter results, but how was it helping in terms of the big picture? And it was all about giving, providing more value than what you expect in payment. So that was his first meeting, that first day, the first condition, and the first law. So we go on to the second day. The second day, he met with a CEO of a company called Learning Systems for Children Incorporated. And Learning Systems for Children, this is a company that was run by a woman who used to be a school teacher, and she just felt, as many, 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 many school teachers feel, very stifled by the curriculum and the materials that they're forced to use and cast upon the kids in the classroom. And she finally just said enough was enough. She had so many ideas and creative things that she wanted to do. And everybody, all the parents, loved her as she worked with their students. But she felt very constrained in the environment, and she was impacting so few. You know, she was doing greatness with her students, but impacting so few. So she spawned off and decided to start a company and got some through connections made. She got investors, and she started a multi-million-dollar company, Learning Systems for Children, Inc., which does all this creative work with children. She expects now to impact 20 to 25 million children on an annual basis instead of impacting 30 in a classroom. So look how she chose to step up from being impacting in a classroom of 30 to impacting 20 to 25 million children. The law that's learned by this lesson was what? Your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So if you want more success, find a way to impact more lives. One of the reasons I love I Can. Through I Can, you can impact 4,000 lives. You just say, I can. Commit to one a month for 12 months and share it with others. And each one of those get 12 a month. And look at the impact you have. Instead of signing up your next-door neighbor and placing her automatic order and managing their automatic order every month, maybe there's something bigger we can do. There's a bigger impact we can have. So it's a belief system. It was cute. This woman talked about her background, the CEO of Learning Systems. When she shared with Joe, she said, what we end up doing is making stuff up. She said, I was raised in a family, and what I had made up is that people who are rich because they take advantage of other people. And those people who really care about other people are supplying worthy services, and they never get rich. And that's what she had in her mind as she was teaching school. She said, I'm never going to get rich, but I'm supplying worthy services. And people who supply worthy services never get rich. Well, how is she ever going to make a huge difference in the world if she had that as her paradigm, a belief system. So she had to change her paradigm. She had to believe. She had to shift and say, you know what? People who supply worthy services on a massive level can get very rich. And she broke through her paradigm because she came to the conclusion that being broke and being rich are both decisions that we just make. And these are gigantic lessons for Joe to learn. So now we go on to Joe's condition. What did he have to do? He had to go out and apply the law of compensation. Your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So he took that condition, and what did he do? He went back to work, and Rachel in the morning had given him, who is, again, the chairman's, you know, little kind of housekeeper, you know, whatever. I'll call it apprentice more than a housekeeper anyway. So Rachel, who was working for the chairman, had gifted him a pound of coffee. When he got back to work, he took that pound of coffee, and he started making coffee, and he decided, I'll just make coffee for everyone. So he made coffee for everyone in the whole, all the employees at his business. And that was his way of sharing and impacting more lives. Understanding the law of your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So he just knew he had to impact more. It wasn't about just getting a cup of coffee for his secretary. He got a cup of coffee for everybody in his whole business. They also talked in this chapter about the three universal reasons for working: survive, save, and serve. The problem is the majority of us spend all of our time in the first one, a method of survival. When we need to be surviving, we need to get that beyond ourselves as a survival level, start saving, and then most importantly, we need to spend our time serving. We need to reverse that emphasis and put the emphasis on serving instead of surviving. The third law was the next day. So the next day he shows up to the chairman and he introduces him to Sam Rosen, who used to be a very poor insurance salesman. I mean, the guy couldn't sell a thing. He couldn't get anything done. He was on rope's end. And then he figured out networking. He figured out that he needed to create an abundance of people around him who really totally cared about his success. So how did he figure that out? How did he learn what was going to create that for him? Well, he found out that if he quit keeping score, if he started putting other people's interests first, he looked at our world is based on the fact that we give to others based on what we're going to get back. It's kind of like, well, what has she done for me lately attitude? And he took that attitude and he said, let's throw the attitude out and let's not quit keeping score and let's start putting other people's interests first. And that's what Sam Rosen did. He started putting everybody else's interests first in his life and supporting them to create wins in their lives. And it was unbelievable what he became. Another classic multi-millionaire who built a phenomenal business. And now none of these people really had to work at all, but he continues to choose to work. But it was all based on him putting other people's interests first. So it's called the law of influence. Your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Putting other people's interests first creates influence. Givers attract. They are like magnets. And that's what it's about. It's about putting other people's interests first because that's what creates influence. You don't go out there and have influence. You create influence by first putting other people's interests ahead of yours. And givers, once you become a massive giver and you pour into people, that's what attracts others like magnets. So that you place other people's interests first. They'll trust you, they'll align with you, they'll want to be around you. It's the big attractor factor. So Joe got home. He had to apply that in his life. And I think the application in life is what's so great. If we each of us took these five laws every day and had to apply them in our life once a day, they would become habitual for you. And what a difference you'd make in your life. But Joe got home that night, and he's like, okay, how do I apply this condition? It was late at night, and he just was worn out, and he didn't see how he was going to do it. And his wife also had a very high-stress job, and they kind of had a rule between the two of them. The rule was this. The rule said that at the end of the day when they got home, they would only get 30 minutes apiece of complaining time, whining and complaining about how bad their day was or what stress it was in and all that kind of stuff. And that was their set rule. And this rule wasn't established day one. This rule was something that because over time they had gotten so caught up and wrought up in each other's problems at work and all the issues going on that they isolated this and came up with this rule between the two of them to survive in a home together, that they were just They could only stay negative so long, and then they had to stop. That was your limit. So that night, Joe gets home, and his wife started, you know, as they were climbing into bed, his wife started on what a miserable day she had. And after her 30 minutes, she kind of just looked at him and said, "I guess I'm done." And that's when Joe thought twice about it. He says, "Why does she have to be done? If this isn't a 50-50 world, I'm not weighing how much is it, you know, am I getting, how much is she getting, how much are we getting each out of each other, and it's not about," and I go back to the law of influence, which is what? It's a law that says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. So he just looked at his wife. He said, no, honey, go on. Just, you know, finish what you're talking to me about. Let's dig into it. You share with me. I'm hearing you. You know, and so he led his wife, and she basically talked herself, started crying, and he was trying to show empathy, and she kind of almost cried herself to sleep that night. And Joe was trying to say, "I love you, honey," as he was going to bed, and she was already asleep. She had already fallen asleep. She had just, you know, talked herself through this misery, and he tried to console her, and she just finally just worked herself into sleep. And so he rolled over and went to bed, and he woke up in the morning, and it was late. She was already gone. His wife was out of the bed. She hadn't woken him up, and he was miserable because he thought, "I'm going to be late to work." And he rolled over, and he looked, and there was a little note left by his wife on her pillow. And the note said, "My sweet Joe, I hope I succeeded in slipping out without waking you. You deserve the extra rest. After the earful I gave you last night," and it went on and on, "thank you so much. Thank you for your generosity." And he thought about that, and he went, "Generosity, my sweet Joey." He was like taken back by all this language. And he goes, and then she concluded by, "I can't remember ever feeling so listened to, so heard. I love you." Signed by his wife. And Joe was at a total loss. He didn't get it. He said, "Generous?" He said, what had been so generous about what he had done? He didn't even get it. And then he started rubbing his face in amazement. And it wasn't about the complaining at all. She just wanted him to do what? Listen. She just wanted to be heard. And he started, and then he had remembered, he started thinking. He goes, that was that voice at the hinge which said, "Stop keeping score." And he started laughing because he'd realized he'd done his homework. He had met his condition. He had given and put her ahead of himself. And the intriguing thing that he recognized in all this is that, you know, more about his wife's happiness than he does about his own, and he pours into her, and that's okay to make that kind of contribution. And he sat back and thought, too, during the day, as he thought the next day, he was thinking, when was the last time, if ever, I've gotten a note from my wife? So how beautiful was that about the law of influence in applying directly to his life? So the next day, the fourth day comes along, and the fourth day he's meeting with a woman, her name is Deborah Daniel, and she's in real estate sales. And she started off in real estate sales by just being a failure. I mean, she was a total failure. She couldn't sell anything, and she was just, you know, just kind of working her life along and just about to quit. She'd gotten to the point where this isn't working. I'm just, you know, I've just had it. I've had enough of it. It's just not going to ever be for me. This isn't the type of business that I'm ever going to be good at. And she went to a seminar and took some notes, and she just came to the conclusion that she was going to quit doing real estate because she just wasn't good at it. She tried to follow all the formats, all the structure that they'd given her, and say the right thing, kind of things all along. The scripts, she followed all the scripts, but she'd never close a house. She couldn't close any real estate. So anyway, she went to a seminar and she listened to some stuff, but all it did was kind of point to her the concept that this wasn't for her, and, you know, it wasn't something that she could do. So she was ready to clean out her desk. She had one last appointment that she couldn't weasel out of, so purely out of obligation, she met with a prospect and drove her to see a house. And in her head, she had already determined that it's already over, so she just thought, what the heck, I'm just going to have a good time. So she just had a great time. She just hung out with the woman. She let go. She gave up on all the techniques she had learned, all the scripts, all the stuff. She didn't even bring the spec sheets on the house that she was showing. Can you imagine? And she laughed at herself in such a way because she thought, how silly is that? And so on the way over to the house, she just chattered about all sorts of things, everything under the sun, silly stuff. She, you know, whatever the woman wanted to talk about, she just went on and on and on. And just kind of looked up at herself and thought about what a ditch she was. And of course, what happened? the woman bought the house. And it was an incredible story. She learned that day. She learned an important thing. She learned that something more important than structure and scripts and all the, you know, to be exactly what people want you to be and all the techniques in the world. And that something more was what? How to be a friend, how to care, how to make people feel good about themselves. That's what she was learning. And she did all of that, how to care, how to be a friend, how to make people feel good about themselves, all came from the process of what? Her stepping into who she was, just being her. And she got it. She's got it, that adding value. And what did she have? What value did she have to add? The value she was adding was herself. I had nothing to add but myself, is what she said. And since that day forward, of course, she became a multimillionaire in real estate, and now not just residential, but commercial real estate. Huge, huge. So she just added value. So she created this add value, and the number one value you have is the value of you, pouring you into the other person. So how to make people, how to care for people, make people feel like $1 million. And it was intriguing, as I was doing this outline yesterday, preparing for this talk, I remember talking on Friday night Saturday when I was doing a training. I was giving them some input that when I got stuck on the tarmac last week and I was on the plane with a gal, and she had, I learned everything about this woman. I could write a book about this woman who sat next to me on the airplane when we were sitting on the tarmac. And what did that tell me about myself? It told me I was a great listener. It told me I really sat back and just absorbed what she had to say. And when she asked me questions, I would answer and turn the question back over. And we just went on and on. And, you know, when that woman got off the plane and I helped her and I rebooked her flight with her so she could get on the next flight going to Phoenix the next day just like I had to do, I mean, she looked at me and she said, "You made me feel like $1 million, Mary Jo." And I just thought, you know, that was like a – when people can say that to you, that's when you know that you've done what? You've poured into them. You have – you know, you can get people to feel good about themselves, and that's a goal we should always have. It's about how we are pouring into other people. We are adding the value. We're adding ourselves in the mixture. I didn't buy anything. I didn't pay for anything. I didn't do it. All I did was pour in me into her. I just kept doing, you know, favors for her, helping her get through what was a traumatic experience for a 21-year-old kid who didn't, you know, travel very much and you know, just being a great listener to, what a great experience. So it's the law here is what? The law here is the law of authenticity. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. So be yourself. When we try to be other people, when we try to pretend like we're Jet, or we pretend like we're, you know, Terry Petrovic, or we pretend we're Tim Altvader, or we pretend we're, you know, you can't be other people. You just be yourself. You can work on improving aspects of who you are and how you work with people and becoming a better, establish greater skills and being a better listener and those kind of things, and getting rid of that little small voice in your head and relieve yourself of cynical and negative thoughts and negative talk and get rid of those kind of things in your life. Yes, you can work on all of those things to be a better you, but the person wants you. It's you being authentic that needs to come across in relationships. And that's an incredible law, the law of authenticity. So he went back, and now here's Joe again trying to figure out, how am I going to apply this law, the law of authenticity, how am I going to apply that to my life and look at what he can create by applying the law of authenticity. And he ended up speaking with a guy in his office, the guy who gave him the referral to go visit the chairman. And he never understood this guy in his office. His name was Gus, and he's the one he went to get the referral to the chairman. So that's how he got led into this whole, you know, meeting up with this guy and finding these other people. But he went back to Gus in the office, and he just sat down with him that afternoon, and he said, because here this guy looked like he didn't work at all. He was very laid back. He didn't have a lot of clients coming in and out of his office, but he had a corner office in the business Joe was in, and everybody knew he had to be worth, you know, a lot of money, and they didn't understand why he was still, you know, hanging out at the office, or, you know, what he did, or they just had so many rumors about him that people were maybe the company just allowed him to work there because of loyalty. You know, they had all these kind of, so he went to Gus, and all he did was sit down and start talking to Gus about, you know, who are you anyway, and what are you, you know, what's, and he came to the conclusion through just listening back and forth with Gus that Gus was the guy who was actually the connector who put all these people together. He's the one that got the guy who ran the restaurant mixed in with the real estate lady. He's the one that got the chairman to help put together financial groups to support these people. He helped put the financial together. I mean, it was just, he learned so much that this guy was like the connector guy who actually helped being the networker, the supreme networker, to get people together. And through all of that, doing all that connection, of course, being part of the investors in each of these little, you know, businesses, of course, Gus became a multi. We don't know what his net worth was. It was something off the charts. But it was, he just had this great open conversation with Gus about who he was and his belief in what a great guy he must be, and thanking him for what he had done for Joe. And that was kind of his experience around his condition around law of authenticity, that he became authentic with Gus instead of guessing and walking around the office guessing and assuming. And how many of us make assumptions? You know, we, every time I hear, well, I'm just going to assume, and I go, why assume? Find out why. Talk to the person. Come from authentic. Just be you. Ask a question. And that's how we need to operate from. We need to come from authenticity and get out of assumption. And that's exactly what he did with Gus. So that's how he applied that law, the law of authenticity, in that day. And then the last day came along, the fifth day. And that day, he worked with the chairman alone, just the two of them. And he was really the guy that was doing, giving himself his own lesson. And they talked about, you know, the differences, like what have you learned in a week? And the chairman just sat and talked to him about what he had learned and about looking at all these people and all the giving that they'd done. And he said, sure, you're probably looking at these people thinking, giving, 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 and that's not me. That's who they are. That's not who I am, and on and on and on. And so he started talking to him about different things about, like, first of all, try to exhale. You know, and so he had him exhale and count to 30. Because he talked about, let me first premise on this. When he talked about giving, he said, he talked about giving and receiving. He said a lot of people give just to receive. And some people have learned that and they've been trained that, and that's the way they're grown up. And people say it's always better to give than to receive. And some people, and then there are other people out there that give and never receive. And the imbalance is what's so inappropriate. And so what the chairman said is, he said, I want you just to exhale. Try something for me. Count to 30, and he says, I want you to exhale. Slowly exhale. Take a deep breath and let's slowly exhale and see how long you can last. And as he was exhaling, he only counted up to about, I think they got to maybe 17 or something. I don't remember exactly what number, but he didn't get to 30. And he said, so what is this a lesson on, exhaling? In order to exhale, what do you have to do with the other? You can't just continue to exhale. If it's medically proven that it's healthier for you to exhale than inhale, would that make a difference? Of course not. We still need to inhale in order to exhale. Because you can't go on exhaling forever. No matter what argument anyone gives you, you can't exhale forever. Well, that's the same thing with your heart relaxing and contracting. It's healthier for your heart to relax, but you can't relax the heart unless it contracts. And it's the same thing with giving, as he drew the analogy. Receiving is a natural result of giving. If you give and then try to stop the receiving that comes back, you're going to, what? Put an end to what you're trying to achieve. Every giving can only happen because there's also receiving being done. And you need to learn how to be a great receiver as well, because otherwise you'll stop the flow. So this is the new law that he's teaching. It's about receptivity, the law of receptivity. The key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. If we're not open to receiving because we're too caught up in angst and in and in anger or negativity, or we're too busy, we're too much of a go-getter, we're always on the go, 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 go. You got to be open to receiving. It's kind of like the concept of stop and smelling the roses. We have to be able to stop and be able to start seeing our environment, because it's in our environment that receiving takes place. So we got to take that deep breath. And some of us are really bad at doing this. I can say that for myself. Sometimes we get so busy and so caught up that we don't stop and smell the roses and start acknowledging what's happening around us. We need to do that to start receiving back. And we have to be great receivers. So the law here of receptivity is that everything has a yin and a yang. Everything in the universe has an opposite tucked inside of it. That's what he talked about. Virtually everything in our universe is this opposite tucked inside of it. So we need to look for that receiving that we need to be aware of and open to have it happen. And so Joe, that was his final lesson, is the law of receptivity, that we need to be open and willing to receive to gain that flow. And it's the only way that the law of giving is effective, is to be open to receiving. So Joe went back to his office at the end of the day, his last time, and he ran into somebody in the office, and they started talking, and he said, no, I'll close up. And Joe said, no, I'll shut the thing and turn it on a coffee pot. And all of a sudden he found himself in an arena where he felt like he was really missing everything in the office. I mean, he really started taking in the office. And he wasn't coming from anxiety. It was the end of the third quarter. He hadn't met any of his quotas, and he was relaxed. There was no anxiety. There was no rush. There was no I'm a failure. There was none of that stuff. None of the stuff, I'll align it to my people and I can. At the end of the month, Mary Jo, I don't have my I can. Somebody said to me at the end of March, and I'm like going, yeah, so? And I said, quit taking the hammer out. You got to sit back. This is it. You be satisfied, right? We're going after greatness. It didn't happen this month. It's not the end of the world. And, you know, get out of anxiety. You know, just let it go. Open to receive. That's exactly what he was. No anxiety, no angst, no anything. And all of a sudden the phone rang. And it was after hours, and he picked it up, and the first thing the guy said was, I can't believe you're still there. Anyone is still there. Da, 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 da. And so he started talking to this gentleman. He didn't know who this person was. And he started listening to him, and he said, hey, the guy was in total dire need. And he was talking about having a big deal that's about to come down. And he said, it's so big, it's the biggest deal that he's ever seen, and he needs some help, and he doesn't know how to find it, and da, 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 and he went on and on and on, and needed networking, and so Joe started asking him that, you know, what are you looking for? I mean, what is it that you're looking, you know, and Joe was already of the belief that perhaps that this was something that was going to be beyond, but he just said, let me listen to you, what are you looking for? And the guy says, well, we lost one of our suppliers, and we desperately need to find a supplier. That because they were building this international, hotel chains, consolidating them all under one roof, rebranding them, you know, and they're kicking off with a relaunching of a luxury cruise line. I mean, this thing was so huge, and Joe's listening to all this stuff, and the guy's saying, but we lost one of our suppliers, and it's incredible. We need this to meet their scale or their quality standards. And it's in the concessionary industry, and we just want to try to find somebody and try to fill it in, and we don't know if it's even doable in the time frame because we only have 3 weeks, and we need a huge mega volume, mega quality. And so Joe said, well, what's the industry? And he said, premium top shelf coffee. And, of course, Joe right away went back to Rachel. Through his networking, of course, he knew Rachel, but the woman that was like an apprentice to the chairman. And he thought right away, I think I have a source for you. And a year later, Joe is, you know, one of the managing partners of one of the fastest growing companies in the country called Rachel's Famous Coffee. And that's the year later, the net result of all of this training he went through and just being open to receive and seeing, applying the fifth condition, the fifth law in such an incredible way in his life, being open to receive. And putting that together and networking with Rachel, they created one of the, you know, wealthiest companies and fastest growing companies in the country in the next year called Rachel's Famous Coffee. So that's kind of how the book concludes, and it's just a neat book that gives us all the ideas of all these five incredible laws of what they call stratospheric success, and incredible about the law of value that we just I'll review them quickly. Your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Second law, of course, is the law of compensation, which has to do with your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. The third law is law of influence, which is your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. The fourth law is the law of authenticity. The most valuable gift you ever have to give is yourself. And the fifth law is the law of receptivity. In other words, the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And that's it. There's your Go-Giver book. And as you can see, great principles, great laws, really applicable to what we do in Manatech for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. What we're about is giving, 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 and supporting people in so many ways. It's just a great book and great principles. And if we all took those five laws, I just thought, wouldn't it be cool to just take those five laws and every day try to come up with them a day, like just kind of like what Joe did. And put a burden on your heart to, I want to apply one of these every day and just acknowledge yourself in the application, see where they apply and see how you're applying them in your day in and day out living and what a difference that can make for your life. So that's a Go-Giver. Anyone have any comments, any questions, anything?
I have a comment about the book.
Okay.
This is Melissa.
Hi,
For the law of compensation, when I read that book, I thought it was so cool. The more you give, your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them.
Yeah.
And you talked about how he was given that pound of Rachel's coffee,
uh-huh.
and then he shared it with all the employees there at his office, his coworkers. And then Gus asked him, how did it feel? And he said, I felt really like an idiot. And it just came to me that's so important for us to step out of our comfort zone. And then Gus answered him, sometimes you feel foolish, even look foolish, but you do the thing anyway. And
right.
That's what I wanted to say is we can
Great.
Start this. We might feel stupid sometimes, but we got to do it. We got to start.
Right. Exactly. And people might even call you stupid. I mean, because other people won't understand why you're doing it. Does that make some sense, too? I mean, our society doesn't always value that kind of activity, does it? Somebody might look at you and say, what do you expect to get from this? It's kind of like the little boy throwing the starfish into the ocean and the wise man coming along and saying, but son, how do you ever expect to make a difference? That's the kind of languaging you might come up against, not just internally about feeling stupid yourself, but externally other people might do the same thing to you. But that's not what it's about, right? Got it? Perfect. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, that's
very
another great thing. Uh-huh. Hi, Roz.
Hi, morning. It reminds me when we were doing Landmark, there was a thing that was often taught. They would say a relationship is always about 100% nothing. Give 100% and expect nothing in return.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very difficult concept to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I can honestly say I've never really applied myself because I've never really understood. But I think this has really made that a lot clearer.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. I think that applies really big time in that law of influence, in the chapter that he does on the law of influence, where we put other people's interests first and we never weigh. There's not a scale of justice out there of, 50-50. You know, it's not about weighing how much we pour into people without any expectation of
right.
any response. It's not about what have they done for me lately, which tends to be a prevalent attitude we have in our society, and that
right.
doesn't get you anywhere. The concept here is we give because it's the right thing to do, and it's the way we can impact lives, and that's why we give. We give. Yeah. Beautiful. Yep.
Right.
Another way of looking at it. Yeah. Yeah, these principles in this book are not anything by any means are any of these principles new. They're just another way of, supplying them and supporting them to us and a great concept of how Bob portrayed them in the book, how he walked through these different experiences to portray the different laws. Yeah.
Great, Mary Jo, you're an inspirational storyteller. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Well, Bob did the storytelling. I just repeated it for you. And I did, you know, I wasn't even sure I was going to do this for you guys because I thought, you know, the book's kind of simple. But, you know, Lydia was so inspirational. You know, she looks at me and she goes, you know, Mary Jo, when people hear it from somebody else, it, you know, there's just always some kind of blessing because sometimes we don't get the same thing out of a book. So, you know, you sharing it would probably bless some people. So, and I said, okay, that's all you need to tell me.
Mary Jo, great summary of that book. Thanks.
You bet. You bet.
I had a question on your website. You used to have a document 8 was a wonderful piece on how to share this with others. And
uh-huh.
It's gone. What happened?
Oh, you know why? I think it was a support document. And the reason we're going to put it back up there, the reason we took it down is because it was a combination of a number of presidentials' work, and Judy Quick did the original piece, and then people tacked on other things to it, and they referred to like 3 documents in there that I didn't have access to. So I was getting bombarded by emails and phone calls about, Mary Jo, what's this 7 thing? What's this 7-page thing? Or what's this 7-step? And I kept going, I can't answer the question because I didn't build, this isn't my document, and I don't have access to those other documents. So what we're doing is we've gone back to see if we can access those documents. If not, we're amending that one so we can put it back on. But it'll be back on this week, so keep your eyes open. Yeah.
Okay,
but that's
great,
the reason.
Thanks.
I just didn't want to get, poor Lydia was getting bombarded with all sorts of questions about it. But we'll have it back out there, and it's terrific. In fact, a lot of people have been using that document to do cold calling. And, you know, like if they buy leads, they've been using the format in there, and they find it to be just terrific. They just feel so empowered by the language that Judy's got in there and her step-by-step process. And it also gives you a lot of ideas of where to find leads and how to open up your, you know, sphere of influence. Right. You bet. It'll be back up. You bet. Anyone else? Okay. Love you guys. Have a great week. And we're only, like, what, 2 weeks from Wednesday, we're all on airplanes coming to Dallas, yoo-hoo, or buses or vans or cars or however you're getting here for Manifest. Can't wait to see y'all, give lots of hugs, and we can all be together. But we'll be on a call next week. Don't forget about, you know, keep on working towards whatever you're trying to achieve this month. So I guess this is, I don't even keep track of week of the period. I guess we're in our 3rd week of the business period, is that right? And we're, you know, just out there doing our thing, getting as many points as we can towards the cruise for those of you trying to win that, or the Cancun trip, I mean, you win that, and then just work on getting towards Manitech and being ready to get that. You know, I love this law of receptivity because it tells me that we all need to be open to receive the $10,000 in the lottery system at Manifest. So get ready for that one, okay? I know. I'm going to be excited for all the people that win that. It's going to be so cute to watch people get up on stage, and instead of getting a piece of luggage, they're going to get a check for $10,000. Now you're talking, okay? All right, people. Love you all and hope to see you soon, and we'll talk next Monday. Okay, bye.
Mary Jo, can I ask you something quickly about
sure.
that?
Go ahead.
I received an email from Manitech to say that you can only be eligible for that $10,000 if you are personally there. And I actually won $500 in one of my legs, my personal legs, and $500 in another. So I'm registered in my one, but I can't register for Manifest in both legs. So I'm wondering how to resolve that.
I don't know. I think call Manitech and find out that.
I sent an email to Beth Graves. I haven't heard back. That was about
that's the best I can do for you, sister. That's all I could tell you is that I don't know.
I'm qualified in 3 legs, one both of mine and one in Ira's because of the point structure that you suggested. But
yeah, right, you kind of followed my advice, right? How to maximize your money.
I was like, well, how do I get both of them so they're both eligible?
Right, there you go. Yeah, got it. Because you can have the joint position, so I don't know how to do that. I would think that, I know how I would do it if I don't get an answer from Manitech. I would register both positions at Manifest. I would buy Manifest tickets for both, and maybe, you know, if you do that, we can always fill that second slot with somebody else. It doesn't, you know, let's say you're not going to come twice, But I could have somebody else, because I've got people calling me all the time looking for manifest tickets. You know, we could sell it to somebody else, and they would just come under you that name. So it would show the position is registered. It would just be another body that's there. And then if that position wins, you, of course, would win it because you're both of those positions.
Right.
You follow me? And I don't think that's playing with the system. I think that just allows you to, you know, that you don't have to pay $109 twice to have both positions registered.
Maybe I'll do a name change because I have another associate who's registered, and maybe they'll change. If she wasn't a qualifier, but maybe they'll change the name there.
There you go. There's another way of doing it. Exactly.
I'll contact Susan.
Okay.
Because
you could stand up and receive either award because you are technically both of those positions. Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
There you go. That's what I
would
do.
I will do that. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Mary Jo, this is Leslie Murphy. Can I just ask you a real quick question? It's not really that related, but I have a new person involved, and they're taking a whole bunch of other vitamins. And I mean, my inclination is to tell them just to stop taking all the other stuff. Just, you know, start on the basic core four.
Uh-huh.
And he's still taking some of the stuff, and he's itching. In combination with the Manitech and the vitamins he was taking before.
Yeah, got it. What I usually do when I step people on a program is I'd say, give me a laundry list of what you're taking, and then I tell them why they should get it. If you can get the list of what they're taking and then tell them why, you know, I go through it and I say, Phytomatrix will replace these three, and Plus gets rid of this one for you, and Ambritose, you don't need your glucosamine sulfate and da-da-da-da-da because, you know, Ambritose replaces this, and this, and what you're taking. So I help them see why they don't need the other. You get it? So they can see the duplicity. If you can do that for him, that's a great thing because I don't know what the itching is caused from. We do have a cleanse response. When people get on Manitech products, you might have a cleanse response that could be itching or other things. You know, we have things because your body excretes, you know, different things out of it, you know, toxins and poisons through the skin tissue and through other areas, but, you know, there are only so many places it excretes it, so you could actually get, you know, a rash and some itching that occurs because your body's going through a cleanse. That could be happening as well, but I don't think people need to double up on a lot of that stuff. I would do the analysis, but take the laundry list of what they have and then just compare it against our Manitech products, and if you need some help, you know, get some help doing that. But that's what I do with people, and that just, because it makes them feel comfortable that they are getting rid of stuff that's duplicated versus you. Because if somebody says, the other thing that you're going to find is some people are going to be, I mean, there's major products that we don't duplicate. Like somebody's on omega-3s, well, our core 4 doesn't cover omega-3s, so I tell them to stay on it. You know, so it's not going to be just unilaterally saying get off everything you're on and just take our stuff, because they could be on some things we don't cover, okay, that are good. Yeah. Okie doke. All right. Love you guys. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
The moderator has disconnected.